Frida Kahlo, the first time I heard of her was my grandma was in a nursing home for like 3 years and she lived with us. And then her nursing home, I would go there like all the time. It was like at least 3 times a week. I was seeing old people. Like, it was like kind of traumatizing. I realized I have carry a lot of trauma from going to nursing homes a lot as a kid, because it's just like you see some sad things.
If you follow Audrey Matusa's photography, you'll see a lot of ideas at play. There's flowers, there's bright colors, and there's a unique feminine expression that reminds you of her inspirations.
But on my way to her room, there was a huge Frida Kahlo painting, the self-portrait of her with the monkey and the panther in the background. And I looked at that and being like, holy hell, like with like the barbed wire on her neck and it was bleeding. I'm like, dang, like, this is painful. And I don't know why. I think maybe I like that picture the most because of everything else was like, oh, it's a geometric painting. Oh, there's like a sunset. This picture represented kind of like a pain to it. And I think I always latched on to that because I was like, yep, same, this is me coming into this place. So I just thought it was really real.
From Check 2, this is the series. I'm Colin Jackson. In the series, we talk with artists to discover their lives, their inspirations, their goals. Welcome to the second episode. This one features Audrey Matusa. Currently, she heads Sometimes Our House, an art collective whose work puts marginalized groups at the forefront in new ways. A lot of what you see on her and the Sometimes Our House Instagram pages fall into the hashtag girl gaze.
Women are typically portrayed through the male gaze. That's just like a historical thing. Hollywood coined it. That's just what we do. What would a woman do to benefit a man? That's a story plot. Or how can a man save a woman? That's like the plot that we see. Or women as a device for men to gain their own masculinity. Like, they're just still, women are always used as the device, the object, the tool. So ours is like, the girl gaze is like an idea that we depict women's bodies either through the lens of men, but like clearly showing that distortion part and like how it's damaging. Or I think what girl gaze really is, this is like showing your friends and your sisters, like you're viewing them as someone you admire, someone that you look up to. I like to describe it as looking at your sister, like shooting it as if it's your sister or your literal self. So you're like trying to show how great she is, how like without any sort of outside influence. But also you see some pictures where it's like also like raw, because I like some girl gaze where it's like, you know, her body's all contorted and like she has a middle finger and there's like blood coming out of her eyes, you know, like some of that weird stuff, like that's not necessarily aesthetic. Or it's not appealing to people, the masses. Like, that can be girl gaze too, because you're talking about like a girl issue. Like, yes, I want you to see me this way, but I'm not broken. I'm just, you know, fucked up. I'm complicated.
Part of Audrey's mission includes bringing a platform to women of color within traditionally white spaces. And unfortunately, that's what Audrey believes has been a big problem with girl gaze so far. And she's not shy about sharing her opinion when I showed her some examples.
White girls only first. All right, here's one. Sorry, Skipberry. I get really into that because it's true. Girl gaze is still skinny white girls. So this one I really like, where it's like a girl with like some flower petals on her face. She has a lot of makeup on, but like her eyebrows are full and it's cool. It's still like, I would see this picture and be like, okay, this person has seen some cool work from some, like, revolutionary photographers, but they're making it still for a commercialized magazine. Because she's, like, a light-skinned girl with fake freckles. Like, she's doing, like, all the hashtag makeup looks from Instagram, but also putting some flowers in her mouth. Cool. It's cute. Sometimes girl gaze is really just an aesthetic and not, like, a practice. This picture is funny. Because, like, it's a curvy woman standing in front of a brick wall with her hand, like one hand awkwardly on her hand. Like, the reason you're showing someone's body that's curvy, it's to deconstruct a norm. Like, we need to have a voice for curvy bodies, but it's not just because they're hot too. Like, that's not the message. But I guess girl gaze, ideally for me, is saying something, really showing unity between sisters, like having like multiple women in a shot. Like, this one's cool. It's just a bunch of heads together. kind of smushed on the canvas. That's cool. Showing sisterhood, showing unity. But I was like, to be girl gaze, be more about just a girl staying, looking hot, standing in front of a wall.
Sometimes art house is still young, but it's kind of stunning to see what they've done.
I started it this year in January 2017. I had people come up to my house. My only meetings are at my house, my parents' house. That's sometimes our house. I guess our biggest growing moment was I met a woman named Gigi Gomez. She came to the Impact one day where I work. Like, and I saw her and I recognized her from another, like I saw her like at the Bro at a panel before. And I was like, dude, I know you. Like, come to my office, let's talk, because I feel like we need to collaborate. And so we're talking, and then she gave me her email, and basically we decided, like, she came to me with the idea of doing an art show, because she's an artist, wanted to do more work. Her and I met, and I was like, yes, let's do this. It sounds fun. And so, yeah, lots of nights up till, like, past midnight, past my bedtime. A lot of rejection letters from people saying we can't have our show here, or they give up on us last minute and canceling, backing out. But we put a show together anyways last spring during finals week. Called Girl Gaze in Rio Town. And that's when things started to really pop off. Like, I started just literally stopped doing my homework. It just kind of started naturally where, like, your passion just kind of started taking over. And you're like, yep, I really don't care about that project. I have my own project. We had, like, over 60 people show up. I did not know majority of the people that were there. Neither the GG. We were, like, looking around, like, do you, like, know these people? And she's like, I only know 4 people that have been here. And so that was really, that's how we knew, like, growth was happening. And it was great for the artists to see that. And that, the reason I wanted to put on that show, too, was just to show them, like, I'm serious about this. So you investing your time in me and sometimes our house, like, should be beneficial for you. So that was, like, a big moment of growth. Before, it was just me. So now I have, like, 20 people that are interested, want to sign up for projects, and are involved in sometimes our house in some shape, way, or form.
As membership grows beyond the founding females, Audrey's found it hard to make everyone feel included.
I would say I have not. We're really struggling with it right now. So, like, one issue is, it's really female-dominated, very femme. And that's just kind of the photography that I do, is very, like, female fantasy stuff. And that's not necessarily how I am normally. It's just my aesthetic. And because I post most of the pictures on our sometimes art house blogs and stuff like that, or Instagram accounts and stuff, it becomes the aesthetic of sometimes art house, which is cool because people can recognize it when they see it, but it's limiting. It's not necessarily representative of who's in the group. Yeah. I don't know. Typically, it's femme-dominated. Currently, I have not overcome it. It's very much the reality of my issue right now. Like, when you first said, oh, yeah, sometimes our house is femme-focused, I, like, rolled my eyes, and I'm like, fuck, everyone knows. Because it is femme-focused, but I wish it was less apparent at times. Like, that's correct. That's what it is. But it just makes me cringe at times, because I know it's not everyone in the group, and it just makes me I just feel bad excluding certain people, because I'm not sure always how. Obviously, they keep coming to meetings, are my, like, gay males and my trans men that come to meetings. They are cool with it if they keep coming to the space, but I just don't want their identity to be kind of silenced in a group that's supposed to be about not silencing identities, you know? So that's just where labels get hard.
Since she grew up mixed race in a mostly white suburb, she had her own issues finding where her identity fit in.
So in elementary school, middle school, when I had all my fake friends, I was performing blackness. So I was still going between this acting white for my family members and my teachers, performing blackness so I could fulfill that token black friend. That's how they treated me. Of like, oh my God, you're just like Raven. How many fucking times did I hear that I was Raven? All the time. And to the point where I was like saying, like, bam, like I was like trying to do it, because part of me also felt like I was Raven. Like, I identify with her because that show was great. But like hearing it all the time, like, hey, I don't look just like her. Like, we're not the same person. But, you know, at times I would try to fulfill that. So that's what I mean. In some ways, code switching, it's not as easy. Like, my black friends, my white friends. I didn't have the privilege of having black friends for most of the time. In high school, I had a few more friends of color, but they were in the same boat. Performing whiteness for the most part, or like never really got into that part of their identity. One girl who went to Okemos was her parents are from Cameroon, so like she had this very accessible African identity that she always had to herself, and we talked about how she would try to distance herself from that from high school. I can understand what she was saying. It's like we were not proud with being of color, or didn't know what that really meant. Because that's also my household, too. My mom is Black, so like that, I could say that I have some sort of heritage that's accessible to me. But she was always told to not look into her roots, not look into her story. And that's something you'll hear a lot of, baby boomers, I think Black baby boomers say, don't look into your history. Or like their parents told them, don't look, because there's some stuff in there that maybe they don't want to talk about because they had a relative that went to jail or like stuff. I know, maybe someone was like raped, some of the history. The point of the matter is we need that to know that history. It's still a part of you. So college, I made a very clear effort, which upset some of my white friends. They thought there was like some ethical issues and why I was trying to prolong relationships with women of color that I had met. But I'm like, this is my identity. Like, how else am I going to know who I am if I can't connect with other people? Because that's the thing, that we were able to relate in a way that I couldn't relate with my white friends, and I think they were just jealous. Next exhibition, which is called like Highly Reflective, plugging Highly Reflective, are talking more about that. I'm trying to do more work, and I'm working mostly on a short film to kind of talk about my identity, but also not just me, like women of color in general, and also women in general, about wanting to be someone else, trying to look like, trying to act like someone else, not knowing what that means, but like if I just had these two qualities, I could actually be someone. Not seeing yourself as enough type of thing. So it's going to be very like poetic, but or like, you know, vague. So this next show, I'm going to talk more about my race and identity. Currently, it's really just been taking pictures of Black women, because a lot of the photography I was seeing here from like local photographers, there's like a lot of Instagram accounts that are like Black girls popping or melanin popping or like Black girls club, you know, for life. But really sending the wrong message. Like, honestly, I think isolating the Black female community even more, because that's another thing too, of like carefree Black girls, another like hashtag that I think is really what my work has really shown the most. Just depicting Black women, women of color in ways that you don't normally see. So the softer, like quirkier looks were reserved for white girls, or even like curvier girls, but they had to be like overtly quirky, which meant white or lighter skinned.
Photos you see on her Instagram page challenge those notions.
So this picture is of my friend Tamila, and she wanted to do a nude photo shoot. And I was like, whoa. We hung out one time before that, and so I was like really honored that she wanted to do that. And I just was worried about it. I had another friend with me too who she didn't know. So I was just trying to really create like a safe sanctuary spot. So like, oh my God, I hope my parents listen to this. They probably won't. So that's like a spot like where I used to go smoke with my friends all the time. yeah. And it was just, it's a place of like serenity to me. It was just a place that meant something to me because I've had like great conversations there. Like it definitely had like this legacy of like freedom in a sense with your friends and like being close to nature with your friends and like making connections. So I love that we went there because it had like some sort of sentimental vibe to me. Tamila is a cool woman. Like she's bisexual. She has a kid. Like she's an artist. Like, and really like does it herself. Also realized that her and I look really similar. So after I took those pictures, I started thinking about myself, like her and I as the same person. And when we took pictures together, I wasn't telling her like, okay, like push your breasts up a bit more. You know, it was like her, me or my friend were like working with her to like, let's make these powerful. Like how would I want to be shot in a nude? It's not with, you know, versus like if it was a guy photographer, maybe it'd be like, all right, like we need to see more ass in this one. I just felt like her and I, because her and I talk a lot about too, about like our identity and like not having a connection to our African heritage as well. So kind of shooting her in these really like prideful, natural environments was kind of a way of us and me, I guess I thought about an homage to my ancestors, which just sounds really, it sounds like a real stretch, and it is, but that's literally the thoughts that I had when I was editing it. Like I'm like emotional thinking about those pictures. Like they mean a lot to me because they have a lot of layers of identity.
When you look deeply at Audrey's work, you see her influences at play. There's a certain avant-garde rebelliousness in the way she redefines identities with pink backdrops, flowers, and outdated technology.
One time I was at Macy's and they had a Frida Kahlo coffee table book, and I remember flipping through that and seeing more of her work, and I was like, oh wow, this girl's really inappropriate. Like, I was super young, and she had pictures of girls, like, you know, having sex, like girls with, like, you know, looking at their vaginas, and I was like, wow, wow, wow. I don't like to use that word vagina. I thought that was like a bad word. So like, see, you know, so like seeing that at that age, I was associated Frida Kahlo as a rebel. But also really beautiful because I had a unibrow. I was able to identify with her. I had a unibrow and I was like into art and I liked that she had flowers in her hair and like that. I just liked her aesthetic. But I liked also how she was often playing with dual personas. And I always saw myself as having like multiple, wow, multiple personalities or like multiple personas. And that's just mostly because code switching, like that was really what it was. I was mixed and I knew I acted different with my white friends than how I always felt was honest to myself. I really liked Petra Collins. That's honestly why I got lights in the first place. Nick, those neon lights was because of Petra Collins, who was a big artist, photographer with the movement of Rookie Mag, which was kind of like this internet girl scene. Why I got the pink background too. They kind of made millennial pink a thing. So Petra Collins, and she is the master of girl gaze. She didn't invent it, but like she pretty much like for internet age, she invented it. Taking pictures of girls in like granny panties, like stuff that you would actually wear in their room, not on a backdrop with like wind blowing, like in very normal spaces, and them looking like beautiful and wearing like a lot of like vintage like clothes that they're covered and making it cool. That was, yeah. So Petra Collins is really big for me. And like I feel like most photographers now on Instagram know Petra Collins and they're into her. Nakia Brown, I met her. She came to do an exhibition and she was just like one really down to earth and she was showing us her series and it was really simple of like pastel backgrounds. She had a pink one, so another reason why I got pink and blue, and it was about like kind of dispelling myths about black hair. And so she'd show like very portraiture of wigs and weaves and like also showing a bit of the hair process. So there's one of like a girl's holding like two braids in her hair that maybe would like sewn in, and then the other, there's another hand that's lighting at the end. That's how you seal your ends. So like practices that are very common for black women, but like for maybe white people just don't know. And then she also had some like really antique hair utensils that, you know, people don't use anymore, but like just showing like the history of hair too. So she was a big inspiration for me because she was someone that I could see that was a woman of color, was young, that I could, and as a kid too, and I was like doing all these things, like I could see her and be like, I want to do that. So those are my three: Petra Collins, Nakia Brown, and Frida Kahlo. Oh my gosh, Michelaine Thomas. Whoa. I forgot one of the most important influences. Michelaine Thomas, I don't paint anymore, but when I did do paintings, I would like to go back to it. And I saw her work. I'm like, oh my God, this is what I've been trying to do. And she has work where it's like, she is the definition of black girl magic. It's like portraits of black women with their afros out, and she'll use like really high polishy, like reflective glitter paint to paint them. And it's just so satisfying for me. I love glitter. Yeah, Michelaine Thomas is, and like woke. So like black girl magic, girl gaze with a meaning behind it, you know? Yes.
That meaning factors in heavily for the Sometimes Art House style, which Audrey describes as
deconstructing ideas on femininity and like how it's portrayed in media. I think that's what we typically, because since we are a platform, we have to use media. We always talk about in our meetings how social media is going to kill us all. Like, we're very aware that we wouldn't want to use these platforms, but it's the only way that we're going to get ourselves seen. So we try to like actively discuss and like promote through our work how media is what divides us, or what how we inflict harm and our notions of ourselves are influenced by media. A lot of pink, but trying to be like anti-girl redefining femininity. Is this like pink, I think, is often a color that's represented as like passive, and it's always tied to like certain social norms of what it means to be feminine as well. But like, I also am really interested in like oxymorons like pretty ugly, and like there's this other side to pink. Like, pink is perfect, pink is pure, but also pink is always trying to meet the standard. Like, pink is always trying to be perfect and always trying to be pure. So, like, there's this deeper side to it. So, like, trying to show, like, some dimension was that idea. And I think that's also kind of what light does, too. It kind of adds dimension. Honestly, the lights, I just kind of like them. Like, I just like neon lights. It kind of has this, like, futurism type of look sometimes. it makes it more fantasy rather than just like, yeah, like there's girls I take pictures of and I feel like my pictures look so different from the one they normally go meet with photographers. Because like I'm less interested in like them looking hot. It's just about them looking different. Vintage TVs, that's like a big thing, mainly because I have a lot of access to them, but playing off that media idea too, of like the antiquity of some of the notions that we've learned through TV, through television, kind of showing them, especially when it's old TVs with blurry screens. So it's kind of like distortion, but just kind of show like these are antiquated, obsolete ideas that are transmitted through these machines, you know, TV. That's like a way to think of it. I use a lot of flowers. That's just because I really like flowers and they're really femme. So my pictures, you're not going to see a girl just kind of like hanging out by the pool, like with a swimsuit on, and like her mouth's open. She has sunglasses on. Like that's cool and it's attractive and it does say something about a woman. Saying like she's using her like her provocativeness to like attract people and can be very alluring, but it's not girl gaze. That's why I have an issue with a lot of girl gaze project, some things. They're really sexual and not in a way of like, that's progressive to me. It's like, okay, it's a picture of a girl's ass. She's white and she's a size 2. Like what the fuck? That's not progressive, but that's like that's why like a lot of things you'll see if you do like hashtag girl gaze. Whereas like our shows, try to emphasize more women of color in those narrative girl gaze. Let's see like what your friends actually look like. Not wearing a lot of makeup. We use glitter a lot. Like glitter is cool because this is like fantasy. It's cool. But like not putting on makeup. Not really showing off their body so much. Like that's not the point. It's more of like how powerful she looks, or it's like how the light bounces off her skin, or like stuff like that, where it's kind of like this fantasy thing, but it's not about her form. Just taking the emphasis off her body shape and seeing her body. It's like, that's why you're taking the picture. Because that's what girl gaze should really be about.
You can see her bigger vision from that sisterhood mentality.
It's purely just about us getting our work seen. Or like sharing it. So like not getting it seen, but like having a platform for it to be seen. I think because we are an art collective, our main focus is support and community. It's much more of like a community service project if it becomes bigger. Like that's kind of the end goal. The end goal is really to have like a artist residency that turns into like an art school on the weekends. And there's also like a garden for people to come and like do some urban farming. Like that's the end goal or a vision I see for myself. So I don't think we would be pressured to do those things. We may just do it by accident because we're inspired by the trends. We want to mess with it, but I really want to focus moving forward how we can keep decolonizing narratives around the female body, but really, you know, bodies in general, what it means to be feminist and what it means to be an artist too. Like you don't have to have some big following to have your art be validated, because still it's depressing. That's why I say social media will kill us. It's depressing. Our last meeting was just about depression, because like I said, sometimes our house is very much a support group. So we have our artist hangs and we try to get down to business. We typically have a 30-minute conversation about like, hey, so like, what's, why are you crying? Like, why are you sad? And most of the girls say it's from feeling insignificant or not feeling good enough compared to what other people are doing. I post that picture. I got 200 likes. She got like double that. What does that mean? I'm worthless. I don't know. My work's not as good. That's what social media does to you, which is killer for an artist to have your fans, quote unquote, right in your face, kind of grading you. It's almost like not the point of making art in the first place.
So what does Audrey really want people to see when they look at her work?
I can do that too. That's good. That person looks like me. I feel like, you know, so I want our audience to be typically younger girls, my age or younger, seeing some people like them in a way they just don't get to see on TV. That's like key to me and like inspired to want to make that same work. I just want to inspire people to push their boundaries. Like if there's like some, cause there's a lot of dude photographers around here, like to shoot all the pretty girls from like the suburbs. If they see one of our pictures and be like, wow, I should start doing stuff like that. That's cool. Like, yeah, you're taking our idea. If our idea is to feature more women of color with like darker skin, with natural hair and like bigger bodies, like that's great. That's good. That's us. We don't have to get credit for that. That's just something that we want, a norm that we want to see. So yeah, I can do that. And she looks like me. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you want to check out more of Audrey's work and learn more about Sometimes Our House, you can hit them up on Instagram at Audrey Sometimes and at Sometimes Our House respectively. If you or someone you know wants to be featured, just comment and I'll get back with you. Till next time.